friends from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our free preview of our What a Cartoon Movie episode about SpongeBob SquarePants the movie, or is it rather the SpongeBob SquarePants movie?
Yeah, I think that's the one.
It's one of the two. Guess what? I like the first one better, but I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, who is here with me today.
Hey, it's Goofy Goober annual pass holder, Henry Gilbert.
So as part of our new scheduling for 2020, it's been going very well so far, and the last week of every month is a preview of our full-length episode of What a Cartoon Movie that's available at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons for $10 and up subscribers. And of course, this was also hitting the first week of the month if you're not on the Patreon. So
yeah.
So 1 week a month, every What a Cartoon will be our preview, an extended preview of our, I think this one's going to be around 4 hours. We just finished recording it. It's a very long podcast, and they're all very long.
Yeah, because in the, you know, Talking Simpsons, What a Cartoon style, we analyze everything frame by frame and go deep into the history. So for a movie, we do the same too, and talk about films sometimes for four times as long as the movie is. And this, I bet, is close to it.
And we had a lot of fun talking about the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. A very happy movie, a very happy, cheerful, and bright movie with some fun. Also, lots of fun gross out scenes and SpongeBob being drunk.
Yeah. Oh, God. There's so many great and musical moments, like so many great like musical scenes and weird looking monsters and butts, and the movie had it all.
Really does. So we're giving you this extended preview of the history segment of the SpongeBob SquarePants movie for free, but if you want to hear the whole thing, the remaining 3+ hours, you have to go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level, or increase your pledge to $10 if you're already a part of our Patreon. And if you sign up, you'll get that episode and also all the remaining ones we've done back to November of 2018. I believe there's now like 60 hours worth of movie length podcasts out there.
Yeah, I think this puts it towards that. Yeah.
And if you need to kill a bunch of time, as many of us do now, that will keep you busy for quite some time.
Yeah. Oh, man. So many movies. I won't list them all, but like if you enjoy this one about Nickelodeon films, then you should definitely check out our one for Rocco's Modern Life, Static Kling, or other 90s classics like A Goofy Movie, Beavis and Butthead, Do America, Toy Story, Iron Giant, Aladdin. Man, we've done a lot of ones from the 90s now, as I say it out loud.
We're almost 90s children.
Yeah, Batman Mask of the Phantasm, Kiki's Delivery Service, Akira, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Tiny Toons I Spent My Vacation, Nightmare Before Christmas, and others as well. So many great podcasts that you can give a listen to if you up your pledge to $10 a month, or just go all in on the $10 a month. I think you will enjoy it. Plus, you get all that $5 stuff that if you're not yet a subscriber, you're missing out on that too.
That's right. If you're not part of the Patreon right now, we have a ton of bonuses for patrons, 100+ bonus podcasts. That's also where you can unlock all of our mini series, the most recent of which was Talking Futurama Season 2 Part 1. And we have Talking Mission Hill coming up towards the end of April for $5 and up subscribers. So you don't want to miss out on that in this time where we need podcasts more than ever. I have started subscribing to more podcasts. Me, the podcaster.
I have somehow don't have enough podcasts in my ear yet. So I've been really enjoying it too. There's so many great podcasts out there, and we really appreciate you guys giving ours a listen to. And if you want some more, I think this is a great time to go for it.
So thanks so much for listening to this little preamble, folks. We'll let you get into our free segment of our huge, mega long SpongeBob SquarePants movie podcast.
Lives in a pineapple under the sea, SpongeBob SquarePants. Absorbent and yellow and porous as sea, SpongeBob SquarePants. If nautical nonsense be something you wish, SpongeBob SquarePants. Then drop on the deck and flop by the wheel, SpongeBob SquarePants.
2002 was the year of SpongeBob. That's when all the merch exploded. Like, it was trickling into stores and stuff, but I think 2002 was like the big bang for SpongeBob in enthusiasm.
when we talked about the history, it's when it really set in for me that like SpongeBob is one of the biggest like cash cows that ever existed. Like the amount of money SpongeBob made is bonkers, really.
I would say because of how streamlined the process became and because you know, of globalization and the internet, I feel like the SpongeBob merch was even more severe than Simpsons merch a decade prior. I want to say like there had to be more SpongeBob stuff.
The machinery was moving faster. They could make things, and also there was more ways to sell stuff. And different from Bartmania in 1990, I think Nickelodeon had a good idea in 2002 that like adults are buying this as well. We're not just selling things to kids. So that opens up your market quite a lot more too.
I remember the girl I was dating at the time who was into SpongeBob, their Suncoast that she was working in had a SpongeBob section. It was like a SpongeBob aisle with all the toys, what few DVDs there were, like every piece of merch possible.
Yeah. Oh God, the SpongeBob section, Suncoast. I remember that too. My SpongeBob loving friends, we bought the DVDs from there to watch episodes that I didn't see regularly broadcast. Like that's how off the DVD I watched the one where they're stuck in a treehouse and then they're sent into the wilderness with the magic conch.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That one. Okay. Yes, that was a good one. And that was back when there was like, here's six episodes on a DVD.
We're
not doing seasons yet at this point in history. So, yeah. So, SpongeBob, huge in 2002. So, it shouldn't be surprising that Nickelodeon was like, Steven Hillenburg, you got to make a movie. Mm-hmm. People want a movie. Paramount wants a movie. Make a movie. But he at first turned them down, saying, you know, like, these are 11-minute cartoons. A movie needs to be at least seven times longer. Mm-hmm. I don't think we could sustain that length while still keeping the tone of the series intact. Yeah.
Well, you look at the other Nicktoons that got made into feature films, and for, like, the stupid bubble babies of the Rugrats, like, they had to go on a giant world-spanning adventure and, like, have a huge robot in it, and they did major changes to the series. Like, all these things that SpongeBob can't really do. You know, all the interesting thing in all the classic Chupo films is they all had a major status change that made the episodes that followed the film actually be different. They're like, oh, and even a while, not just in the birth of like Dill or Chucky getting a sister, but also in the Wild Thornberrys movie, like the sister found out that she could talk to
That's
animals.
Right.
And so those episodes were different, and that kind of stuff doesn't really work as much for the wackier, no stakes world of a SpongeBob cartoon.
Though I guess spoilers, he does become manager at the end, which I don't know if that persists throughout season four and beyond of the series.
Well, this is kind of really the finale of the Hillenburg era. So the movie, the show does not respect what happens in the movie at all, pretty much.
And it's funny that Hillenburg had the right to refuse. They couldn't just say, okay, we're making the movie without you, buddy. Like, we want the $140 million this will bring us. So apparently, I don't know what the creator's rights were at the time, but he had the ability to turn it down. Maybe they're like, well, we've been through the John Kay stuff. This guy's much easier to work with, but we don't want a public battle over this beloved character in the news. So let's respect him for now.
Well, thanks to his creator credit at the front of every episode right after the nose is played, if the news story comes out like Steven Hillenburg refuses to do SpongeBob movie, that makes them look bad. It really does. Yeah. So I can see, and on top of that, Hillenburg seems like the exact opposite of John Kay in like niceness and workability. So,
and like productivity and like every respect, liking adult women instead of children. That's important too. Yeah. But yes, the funny thing is, and I'm not sure if we covered it on that first episode that we did, was the show produced three seasons with Hillenburg.
Yeah.
And they shipped their final show in February of 2002. That was like, we're done. People were talking about in interviews I read, like, we were unemployed for like 6 or 7 months. Like, there was like a drought of 2D work in the industry. So, like, we're like, well, we finished SpongeBob. What's next? They thought, like,
they spaced out those episodes that long, too?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, the third season of SpongeBob is really weird because, you know, Hillenburg obviously agreed to make the movie. So, between February of 2002 and the release of the movie, they were just working on the movie, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, that's like a whole extra season of work they did on. I mean, the movie feels like As much work as one season of SpongeBob is, like 20 episodes of work put into a film, even though it's only as long as 7 episodes.
Yeah, I was thinking that like this is like the fourth season's worth of work in this one thing. But the third season is so odd because they wanted to parcel it out as slowly as possible because this movie was, you know, far in the distance. So in the third season, it began in late 2001 and lasted until late 2004. So 20 episodes aired in 2004. And I believe in the entire calendar year of 2003, 2 new episodes aired.
Wow. That
only two. And I think 2.5, there was like the Great Snail Race was like a half of a new show that aired in 2003.
Well, yeah, that is when Patchy the Pirate really came into his own because they could just film 11 minutes of live action goofery with Tom Kenny.
That's right.
He's all ready to be silly and be Patchy the Pirate. And then that can just fill the second half of an episode.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, I think that's why I started liking the show when I saw the Christmas special, because there was like live action bits.
Yeah.
And it was really crazy and creative.
The caveman episode in the final season, also the one where Squidward travels in time in the time machine and meets it was a sequel episode to that. That was just all the cavemen. That one, they also just filmed a full Patchy thing of him hanging out with a caveman. But the caveman was played by Patrick's voice.
Oh, Bill Fagerbake.
Yeah, I was going to say Bill Gooblegobble.
Yeah.
Yes,
he's some sort of Northern European name, let's say.
He seems of Icelandic stock to me.
Yeah. He's a large blonde man. But yeah, the funny thing about this was the show had wrapped. They thought we're done with SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. And then the explosion happened. So these guys were out of work and walking around in malls and stores. And like, they're like, we didn't even realize this was going to be the result of all of our work. Like, we didn't know this was in the cards for our show. And the creative director, Derek Dryman, said, it was an odd feeling because Steve and I had finished all the television episodes we were ever going to do. And it seemed like the rest of the world had just noticed. Mm-hmm. So you make like 65 episodes, you're done with work, and then everyone's like, I like SpongeBob now.
That has to be a little frustrating after you've like killed yourself for 3 whole years and then see everybody is caring about it once your job is over. And you know, I wonder if Hillenburg was feeling like stepping away too. Not that like the show didn't get renewed for more episodes either, but that he was feeling like stepping away after he saw what happened to, you know, Murray, Joe Murray on Rocco. You know,
he had a hard time. In fact, we went over it in the podcast, but Hillenburg ran the fourth season of Rocco because of Murray's own personal life issues and just the how hard it is to run an animated show.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Nickelodeon's constant notes, and you know, it's hard enough to make a show on those deadlines, but also working with a company that wants to make the entirety of the money off of your work and wants it fast.
They wanted all of it. And I will say, fortunately, in a good way, this is a fairly boring history. We'll make it interesting, but the history of this movie is they made the movie they always wanted to make. Nickelodeon gave them a lot of freedom and money, and then they made the movie. It was a hit. There was no, like, I mean, if you look at our past movie episodes, like that I've done and you've done too, Henry, I'm just thinking the ones I've done because I was deep in the research.
Yes.
So like Great Mouse Detective and Aladdin and things like that, where there's like a battle behind the scenes and all these forces tug of warring with each other over, you know, creative ideas. There's none of that here. There's no battle for Hasselhoff. There's no, you can't have that scene. I'm going to quit the movie. No, there's none of that in this movie at all.
Or like on the Goofy movie where there was this fight of like, well, does Goofy sound like Goofy, you know, or also just like money and length and cutting of scenes. Like it sounds like this was a much, once the production began, it sounds like it was just a pretty peaceful thing of like, then we let these Goofy Goobers make what they wanted to make.
And it's all the same people who worked on the series. There's no like new screenwriter brought in. There's no new creative talent brought in. And just like the TV show guys, the production is done, they move on to the movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's a major part of it too that I think really assists in this, because like at Disney or Warner, at least back in the 90s, it did, and the aughts even, it felt like there was the wall between TV and movie, you know, and if you were the TV person who had made all these great TV shows, you had a new boss in the movie division who doubted everything you did and was like, well, you have a new boss now who is your screenwriter writer and they can write your characters better than you. You're like, you don't know Goofy. This person knows Goofy.
It's some Hollywood hot shots in here.
Yeah.
but yeah, the sense I get from doing a lot of research on this, I reread that big oral history that I talked about in the other podcast.
Yes.
Is that Steven Hillenburg was a very private man, very uncomfortable with fame. Mm. And he was basically giving some of the only interviews of his life during this movie because he was kind of forced to.
Like, oh, yeah.
He was able to dodge interviews before, but because this movie was coming out, they're like, we want to talk to the guy behind SpongeBob. And so that's a sense I get. I think he was also very uncomfortable with how popular his creation was and just how much merchandise it spawned, because he's a marine biologist, right? He's like, look at all the plastic we're making. Yes. There's going to be a new coral reef made out of SpongeBob parts in the future. So that made him very uncomfortable.
I could definitely see that. I was just thinking of him as a humble man who didn't want to like be celebrated all the time in every interview. Just like, you're the greatest. Thank you for SpongeBob. But you're right. He, as a marine biologist, especially with a show that, you know, occasionally did do sideways glances to the idea of how much garbage is in the ocean then, it definitely made me think, I bet he was thinking about the destruction of the environment from SpongeBob garbage.
And he had a real problem with Burger King because he hates fast food. He's like, it's not good for kids. I don't want SpongeBob selling fast food. But unfortunately, he's like, we can't do an animated movie without a fast food tie-in. It's just like the thing you have to do. So
it's what the devil demands of your soul for that. Oh, that's too bad.
I believe he had veto power over all merchandise. So I think via Burger King, they just did watches.
Oh, right.
And the characters were not allowed to like promote the food or sell the food. I think there might have been figurines too. And Burger King was like, well, our burgers are flame broiled. Can you make SpongeBob's like burger cooking machine a flame broiler? And he was like, no, that is not how you make a Krabby Patty.
Yeah, that's so, I love that. I'm glad he put his hand up on that. You know, from the Burger King side of things, I bet the PR people were like, what an easy one this is for us. It's a movie about a guy who makes burgers. All right.
And he was pointing it out like, no, that's an ironic choice. Like, SpongeBob thinks the coolest thing to be is a fast food manager because he's very naive. And you see him gleefully doing all these menial tasks.
Yeah. And being a short order cook and exciting for him, it being exciting for him is proof that he's a doofus.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be better than that and move beyond that. And sure, it shows that he's a simple person at least.
Like,
yeah.
I can read like a little classism into that where it's just like, oh, you know, fast food jobs are the thing you move on from. But our bravest people now are fast food workers.
They really are.
And grocery store workers.
All the SpongeBobs out there, we thank you right now.
Yes. But yeah, he was just like, I mean, he created a monster. And it was out of his hands. And he was just a simple guy who liked making cartoons and surfing. And his friends were pointing out in interviews, like, Steve doesn't have 10 ideas for shows. This is the show he wants to make. And I assume, like, after he made this show, he just wanted to kind of quietly retire or just have more ocean fun, because he made, like, one short after this, and it's hard to find.
Oh, yeah. I've never even heard of a thing he did post-SpongeBob. There are some creators who, like, have the drive to keep making things. We talked about Joe Murray. Like, he kept pitching new shows. He's made many shows since Rocco and tried to jumpstart even more. But there are folks who, like, I'm richer than I'll ever need to be. Like, I will never spend all of this money. So, screw it. Why do I want to keep working on this stuff, you know, and subject myself to the pain of making commercial products for giant companies like Viacom?
He's kind of like he's almost like Ralph Bighead in this story in a way. Just like, he created a monster. He didn't hate SpongeBob like Ralph Bighead hates the Bigheads, and SpongeBob is not a way to channel his anger at his parents into a cartoon.
No.
But it's sort of like the creator who can't escape from their work, who's not allowed to escape from their work.
Oh yeah. You're right. He has more in common with the former Ralph Bighead than Joe Murray did at the time of the creation.
And I think the story I see this erroneously talked about just in conversations, like, oh yeah, Hillenburg found out he had ALS and that's when he stepped down. It's like, no, he stepped down because he wanted to step down. He's like, this is the time to end the show. You know, Ren and Stimpy did 52. I think Rocco did 65 or 52. We're good at this number. The movie's the best way to go out. Mm-hmm. I'm done. And there was no, like, he found out later.
Yeah.
But it was not because of his disease or condition, rather.
No, I mean, and I'm glad to know that he enjoyed some retirement time before, you know, the disease took hold or it would have held back his ability to enjoy his, you know, success. And when you see this movie, you're like, where do you go beyond this? Like, yeah. this does everything. I felt that way too, watching the new episodes. I didn't know at the time Hillenberger had quit, but when I say new, I mean episodes in 2005 and 6. But when I watched them, it did feel a little like lacking, and maybe it just was not having Hillenberger there, but also
it's Hillenberg, by the
Hillenberg.
Way. You're thinking of burgers. pre-lunchtime recording.
But not having Hillenberg there, I think did cause a little downturn in quality, but also it just felt like going back to high school after you graduated. It's like, well, but you went beyond this. You did the movie. You did all this cool stuff.
I don't see anyone online complaining about, I mean, people are online complaining about The Simpsons, but I don't see anyone online complaining about the later years of SpongeBob. It feels like something like American Dad, where it's just like, well, that will just go on forever, and it's just, you know, entertainment content that we enjoy.
I think if you search for YouTuber, I bet you'd find a YouTube video that called Who Ruined SpongeBob?
Oh, I'm
Twitter.
Sure there's like 50 of them. But yeah, there was no drama even when it came to handing over the show. There was no like Spumco Games, dust up like there was with Ren and Stimpy. It was like one of the, you know, main creative forces, Phil Tibbett, took over the show. Steven and the creative director left, and he was on in an advisory role. Like, that's what they wanted to do with Ren and Stimpy. Like, John Kay, you're clearly too fucked up to make cartoons, but how about you oversee cartoons? And then, you know, your former team can make them without you. And he's like, no, I'll make my own cartoons, damn it.
Yeah, I'm out of here. You're all slurs. And then
just,
he leaves.
Just you wait.
Yeah.
That's my John Kay impression.
He showed us.
With all the Ripping Friends he would make
Boy,
10 years later.
What a, oh God. Yeah, Ripping Friends was probably airing at the same time this movie was being worked on.
Oh, it was off the air in like 2002.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, probably when the production started, Ripping Friends. I mean, there is like kind of like a Ren and Stimpy to SpongeBob pipeline in a way.
Yeah.
For some of these people.
I thought I remember that because there are like, I think I wrote down 5 times at least in my notes, like, boy, that's some very Ren and Stimpy acting on this moment here, that moment there.
Yeah, it's hard to escape just the huge influence of Ren and Stimpy on 90s cartoons. And this is a 90s cartoon. And it is like, again, I pointed out in that podcast we did, this is the marketable version of Ren and Stimpy that Ren and Stimpy wasn't. It's like 38% less gross. The close-ups are like 25% less gross. It's not as mean or cruel to the characters.
Oh, no.
Like, I don't think any episode ends where SpongeBob dies or like flies into the sun or whatever.
There's no dark ending of just like, oh, I guess you're still broken, huh, or whatever. And also that, like, the pair at the center of it, SpongeBob and Patrick, they're both just like friendly idiots. Like, no one is cruel to none. And even Squidward is more self-hating and depressed instead of Ren's like abusive, maniacal way of acting.
Yeah, the emotions are turned down just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So again, not a, I wouldn't say a boring history, but just a very like straightforward, like, we wanted to make a movie, we made the movie, it made a lot of money, and then Hillenberg left, and then they made SpongeBob for 15 more years and counting.
Yes, yeah, I did see there's still new episodes, and I'm glad Hillenberg would still be involved from time to time, which is good, but him putting his stamp on SpongeBob, I hope he prevented SpongeBob from doing anything that would feel like when you see Homer Simpson's do something and you're like, oh, they would never do that. No.
And then Tibbett eventually left to do his own thing. And then Vincent Waller is now the showrunner, and he's a Ren and Stimpy guy, like from way back in the day, like Spumco era.
Yeah. I mean, they had so many R&S dudes though. Now those guys, like, they got to be into their 60s now or pushing 60.
Yeah. Like Bob Camp worked on some of the later shows too.
Oh,
like
that's good.
They're pulling in a lot of old Ren and Stimpy people.
I think I recall Riccardi being on some of those too. Mm-hmm.
So the movie, animated by Rough Draft Korea, I assume it's weird that like even Futurama is kind of a pre-9/11 show, because the show was meant to go off the air completely. It was like the last season was 01-02 if it had aired as intended. But unfortunately, they held on episodes, so it ended in 03. But I assume like as Futurama was wrapping up, they were starting production on the SpongeBob movie.
Yeah, I bet you're right. I would bet that freed up their time for a film production. And RDK, still, they're really good.
They do like, best work overseas, I want to say. I can't think of a better overseas non-Japanese studio.
Yes, yeah. Nah, yeah. And again, a Ren and Stimpy connection too. They were some of their first jobs RDK was working on Ren and Stimpy.
It's very true. So the movie is written just like an episode of SpongeBob. There's an outline, and then the outline is approved, and then storyboards are drawn based on the outline. So the movie is done with boards.
Fully boarded. That's great. I mean, another thing about putting yourself in the mind of that era is that everything was CG. Like, 2D films were dying. Like, even getting to make a 2D film in 2004 is a big deal.
It was a rotten time for Disney. DreamWorks was kicking their ass. We're in the middle of Shrek mania. Like, Shrek and SpongeBob, both huge at the same time.
I think Home on the Range was like the year before this.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
was the darkest day for Disney since Black Cauldron, I think, in their animation division.
And then they were getting that stuff like Bolt and Chicken Little.
Meet the Robinsons.
Ooh, people like that, but I rented it and I hated it.
Well, even and even Nickelodeon, you know, I think the film before this, or maybe one before, there might have been Hey Arnold, but they did Jimmy Neutron, and that was a huge hit for them.
Just a hideous movie and character.
I agree.
I saw the movie, and I saw a little bit of the series. I'm like, this is disgusting. And Rob Paulson just doing his PJ voice.
You know, why should he give them a new voice?
Exactly.
Why dig extra for that thing?
That felt like a real Trojan horse. It's like, here's the movie, and then we got a TV show. It's like, wait a minute, we have to like the movie first, gentlemen.
Yeah, it. I mean, from a business standpoint, making all of those characters first for a movie and then computer animating for TV, smart move business-wise.
And the movie's TV quality, so you got that too. So we talked about Steven Hillenburg. You know, we said plenty about him, but obviously, rest in peace. Even if he would have gone on to make nothing else after this, he's still just a very valuable member of the animation community, and he made so much good stuff, and he did so much good stuff on Rocko's Modern Life as well. We can't forget about
so
that.
Much. His seasons were the best. Like that,
I think so, yeah.
The Wacky Deli episode, one of our all-time favorites, that was overseen by him. The two What a Cartoons for Rocko we did were from Hillenburg years. Like, because we did, if you guys haven't listened to the Static Kling movie we did, we also did the final episode of the show too.
That's right, we did two episodes of Rocko.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Well, that was because we did, the movie was kind of shorter, so we're like, oh, let's do the last episode since it connects directly.
That's right.
So yeah,
that was more than a month ago, so I forgot.
We've had decades in the last week, as the old saying
it's
goes.
True. And we recorded decades worth of podcasts.
We really
we are planning ahead. So let's talk about all of the quote-unquote writers, but there are borders, obviously. So the first one is Derek Dryman. I'm going to give some mini bios because there's six of these guys, but okay. I'll just give you like the highlights of their career. So Derek Dryman with Steven Hillenburg, they both left the show, but he was the creative director of the first three seasons of the TV series. He started as a storyboard artist on Rocko, and he went on to work for things like Camp Lazlo, and was also an executive producer of Adventure Time. And
I do remember him now in the credits there. Yeah, yeah.
For like a ton of it too.
Yeah.
And he also did a ton of official SpongeBob comics in the teens. Like he drew them.
Oh man, I gotta check those out. I didn't know he did those official SpongeBob comics. The only official SpongeBob comic I've read was the one they did for Free Comic Book Day a couple years ago. And the first page had this amazing joke about SpongeBob saying like, oh, I love Free Comic Book Day, don't you? And Patrick's like, what's Free Comic Book Day? And SpongeBob goes like, oh, it's this sad attempt by a dying industry to try to restart itself by giving away free comic books. It's amazing.
I've seen that panel on Twitter.
Yeah.
So Derek was also a storyboard artist and story artist on a ton of DreamWorks movies after the SpongeBob movie. So I think he just went to DreamWorks, which sounds okay. Sounds like work.
Yeah. Now, hey, sometimes they make something people like. I've heard those How to Train Your Dragons are really good.
Once a decade, they get one movie out, one good movie out. I mean, Pixar could be doing better now.
Yeah, I watched Disney and Pixar's Onward. I couldn't even remember the name of it. It's kind of a forgettable name.
It sounded like Disney Plus.
It will be out on Disney Plus in like 2 weeks. I think.
Like just take it. Just take it.
Yeah. No. I hope that's not the last film I see in theaters for a while, but it might be. But yeah. But I think, you know, not everything, it takes time to make a good thing, you know, and a lot of companies, they're not interested in how long it takes to make something good.
Next guy, super interesting. You can see just the creative talent that went into SpongeBob, and especially with some of these guys who did other things outside of just, you know, storyboarding. Tim Hill. He's one of the boarders, obviously. He started a career writing for Nick shows like Make the Grade, which I believe was a game show.
Oh, boy.
And Welcome Freshman.
Oh, yeah. We yes. just talked a ton about that in next week's podcast.
Episode. Yes, yes. We're doing Welcome Freshman, a show that's inaccessible. And, of course, Rocko's Modern Life. So he has an interesting history as a director of both television and movies.
Oh, really?
So he was a director on the proto Strangers with Candy sketch series Exit 57.
Really?
Yeah. So
he's
part of that crazy group.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
There's a Jerry Blank line in this episode, this movie. So he says, like, I got something to say.
Oh, man,
like,
that could be an Amy Sedaris reference.
I wonder now. Man, I didn't know that.
And he went on to direct movies like Muppets from Space.
Sure.
Yeah.
I've heard that's a better Muppet movie than people give it
I saw it in 2000 and I liked it. He also directed Alvin and the Chipmunks. That movie has come up like three times in the past month during recordings, based on like John Vitti, two writers that are going to be talked about next week in next week's episode.
That's right.
And something else, like Alvin and the Chipmunks, like everyone worked on it.
It was a lot of great people had open schedules, I guess. And, and Alvin was hiring.
Also, Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Worst Garfield movie.
Breckenmeyer Needs to Eat.
So does Tim Hill, I guess. He came from a lot of live action stuff, it sounds like, so at least it fit in that way, I suppose.
Also, Hop, that Easter Bunny movie with like Russell Brand. Was that the guy?
Yeah.
Remember him? Like,
He was the rabbit, and I think Chris. The original Cyclops was him, too.
One of the Hollywood Chris's.
Yeah, the cheapest Chris, who was just in basically the same film as Sonic the Hedgehog.
Pine?
Nope.
Hemsworth?
No.
Is there a Chris Hayes?
I mean, yes, but that's MSNBC host.
Chris Hardwick.
No. We
don't
talk about him. I'm going to look it up.
But there was a time, like, for about, 3 minutes in 2011, we thought Russell Brand was smart.
Oh, yes, yeah. Ooh, well, mate.
Just because he had an accent. And also, other movie, Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever, he directed that.
Yes. Sorry, I'm thinking of James Marsden. He looks so much like a Chris.
He looks like a Hollywood Chris. But yeah, R.I.P. Grumpy Cat. Obviously, you know, I've got a Grumpy Cat mug and a little Bub mug, and they're both dead.
So
what am I going to do with those?
I mean, you can remember them always when you drink your coffee.
Yes, I drink my coffee in memory of them. And also, Tim Hill is the director of the upcoming SpongeBob movie. As of this recording, we don't know what's upcoming in movie theaters.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be out in May, you know. Yeah.
But that's probably going to change. And I think the movie is also like going to kick off a 3D series, because the new movie is a 3D movie. I'm against it. Mm-hmm. I don't like it.
Yeah,
I'm sure they can make it look good, but SpongeBob is a 2D creation.
I mean, it's the way of all things. It is a stealth pilot for basically Muppet Babies for SpongeBob, is my understanding. Camp Bikini Bottom, I believe it's called.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know,
SpongeBob Babies.
I mean, this has been the fight since this movie. Like, there probably were in 2004 execs saying, like, kids don't pay to see 2D anymore. They want to see 3D. And so, you know, the next movie was a lot more 3D, and now they're just like, nah, it's all 3D. Like,
what a bummer.
The trailer, if you've seen the trailer, there are some very SpongeBob-y jokes that feel legitimate, with like posing and snappy acting and crazy takes and everything. So I am interested to check it out at some point, just to see if they could actually pull some of it off in three dimensions.
Like, I'm not even against CGI. I just think, like, I'd be against a 3D Simpsons movie, too. Like, don't do that. I mean, I guess that's what the ride
is. You're not the biggest fan of... the ride is fun to ride. I don't know how much I'd love watching it in action. And I wish they'd done it more like the Hanna-Barbera ride from our childhoods, where they draw animation onto some CGI bullshit, at least.
You gotta listen to the podcast the right episode about this.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
It sure is.
That's a joke. Yeah.
One of the many episodes of that podcast where I was laughing until I was crying. That was Tim Hill. Also, Kent Osborne, very interesting guy. So he started as an actor where he first appeared in School Ties. And then in the 21st century, went on to appear in various mumblecore movies. And I'm making the jerk off motion because that whole genre is the whitest thing in the world.
I'm glad that's over.
Yeah. But, you know, if you enjoy him, fine. I just think it's super self-indulgent. But look at me. I'm a cartoon podcaster.
Hey, look, Who are we to throw stones at Lena Dunham, you know?
Yes. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure about that yet.
Actually, yes. I think it's fine, too.
Metaphorically.
Yes, please.
He was also Rob Schneider's comedy partner for a while.
What?
And went on to host TBS's The Movie Lounge.
I do remember that. Yeah. Okay, wow. And he worked on... He was a writer on this. That's crazy.
But also, Henry, you might know him from being on the many episodes of the Grandma's Virginity podcast for the segment Kent's Closet.
That's right.
Talking about the sexy funny's head, like having sex with Kathy Griffin and getting dumped by her, and just like sexy fun stories.
Having
non-simulated sex on one of his mumblecore movies. I think the mumblecore movies are just to get him laid.
It sounds like it. It sounds like a pickup artist technique, I think. I remember that now. Before, the only sex stories I remembered were the truly horrifying ones from Dino Stamatopoulos.
Yeah, yeah. And so he joined SpongeBob in season 3, also went on to work for Camp Lazlo, and then he fully entered the Cartoon Network sphere and worked on stuff like Flapjack, and that's Flapjack is where he was friends with Jackie Buscarino, who's on the Grandma's Virginity podcast. Yeah. And by the way, Grandma's Virginity podcast was like where all of us comedy weirdos found out about Justin Roiland, creator of Rick and Morty.
It was
a 2-year podcast.
Now I'd be scared to go back to it. I think there's some things on there that are feel different.
10 years ago was a very different time for comedy. Look at anyone's tweets 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, let's be as vulgar and offensive as possible. And that's what it was. I mean, the name of the podcast is the Grandma's Virginity Podcast.
Yes, yeah. But man, what a fun podcast it was in the time, for sure.
Yes, an angry, angry time. And he worked on things like Flapjack, Adventure Time. And I believe he was voice director on those two as well. And he's been voice director on all of Steven Universe.
I didn't know that. I knew Jackie Buscarino was a producer on the show, but wow, he's been a voice director that long. That's pretty awesome. Now I really want to talk to this kid, but I promise, no sex stories. Keep it above the waist.
Yeah, this is a family show sometimes. and he currently worked on, I believe, Summer Camp Island, whose second season will probably premiere this year.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that show. Yeah,
if things are still premiering in 2020.
That seems like a nice show. Well, nobody tell Kent we made fun of Mumblecore and did a jerk off.
Yes,
for
I'm not a fan, but
it's not for me.
No. Taste may vary. But up next we have Aaron Springer, who has an interesting beginning. He started working off at Spumco post Ren and Stimpy.
Working on
their Flash cartoons. So like interesting, or you know, the one thing I can say John Kay did of note after that was he got on the Flash cartoon bandwagon real hard.
He did.
When they were at their ugliest. But this guy was working on stuff like the goddamn George Licker show.
I watched a couple of those on Icebox. I remember
Weekend Pussy Hunts. I believe some music videos. Like, he was in that era of Spumco. He might have worked on a little bit of Ripping Friends. I didn't see that though.
Interesting. Okay. Another more of that Ren and Stimpy DNA in there for sure.
So he wrote a ton of SpongeBob. He wrote 64 segments as of this recording. Man. And I believe he directed like 8 of them. And then he went on to Samurai Jack when SpongeBob wrapped. And then he came back when Samurai Jack was over.
Yeah. You know, he sowed his artistic oats on Samurai Jack. And then it's time to start earning those paychecks on the new adventures of SpongeBob.
And you might have seen his really good Adult Swim pilot that never got made into a series. That was Korgoth of Barbaria.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was him.
Oh, that's awesome. The exact opposite of SpongeBob.
It was so cool. And I'm sure it's still online. And I think the story was that I read in my research was it was greenlit. But then they were like, this is going to cost as much as a regular cartoon costs. And Adult Swim was not doing that in like 2005. Like Venture Brothers was a mistake for them. Like,
That's why there's a Venture. I mean, I think it's the creators take their time on Venture Brothers, but I also think it's the Cartoon Network basically spends one regular television animated series budget every 3 years on Venture Brothers.
Venture Brothers took like 18 months to get renewed.
Yeah.
Like its first season, I think, was in 2004, and it wasn't until late 2006 that the second season premiered. It was nuts.
That was, I went through major. Every time there's a new season of Venture Brothers, I go, how much of my life has changed since the last time I watched a new Venture Brothers?
And by the way, when I say it was a mistake for Cartoon Network, they were not ready to pay for a real cartoon, not like like little puppets they move around of Master Shake and Meatwad, but
animated by underpaid interns, not union writers. Like, though, there's a reason Jackson Public's Jackson Public and not Chris McCullough on that show.
But Doc Hammers, that's his real name, right?
Sure.
So he went on to work for things like The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy.
Good show.
Gravity Falls.
Hell yeah.
Wander Over Yonder. I've never seen that. I heard it's good.
Yeah,
and the new Mickey Mouse shorts. He's a major player in those.
Man, there's a lot of SpongeBob and Ren and Stimpy DNA in those Mickey Mouse shorts, for sure.
And he is the creator and lead character of, I believe, the one season Disney XD show. It's called Billy Dilly Super Duper Subterranean Summer. I watched clips of it. It looks really fun.
I should check that out. Yeah. I never even heard of that one.
It aired like over the summer of 2017. Yeah. And I'm sure there's a lot of good Disney XD stuff that just is not on my radar. And he is also working on the new SpongeBob movie.
Oh, good. That at least gives it an air of legitimacy instead of just, I don't know, like the Scoob movie hiring Real FX, a non-animation union effects company, to do the show and just put in all the jokes. If SpongeBob in his new movie says, I just threw up in my mouth a little, I'm going to be pissed.
Is that a thing?
They fly now. They fly now. I mean, fucking Peter Rabbit in his movies. He even does that. Peter Rabbit, Beatrix Potter's Peter Rabbit still goes like, oh, that's going to leave a mark or whatever.
Check, please. final writer on this, a big part of SpongeBob is Paul Tibbetts. Sorry, I called him Phil earlier. I apologize. So he's the guy who took over for Steven when he stepped down from SpongeBob.
Right.
So he was a showrunner until like 2015 when Vincent Waller took over. So until fairly recently.
Man, a decade. Mm-hmm. A damn decade for that guy. That's impressive.
So he was the director of the second SpongeBob movie, which I think is like 2014-ish.
14-15. Yeah.
And he worked on SpongeBob for 20 years.
Wow.
So yeah, I was actually more recent than I thought. So 1999 to 2018.
Wow.
He worked on all of SpongeBob. I believe 2018 was when the Vincent Waller took over.
Man, that is impressive. Like he's the Al Jean of SpongeBob.
He really is, but he made it better. Or he kept the quality consistent at least.
Sure. Yes, yeah.
I won't say he made it better because I have not even seen those episodes. He was going to direct the third movie, but instead he gave that to Tim Hill. Like, I think he was just kind of done with SpongeBob.
I mean, look, once you got your one movie director credit on your IMDb, so maybe he just felt satisfied then. And he's like, I'll let Tim get that one now.
And before he did SpongeBob, he has very few credits, like super humble beginnings. He was a character designer on CatDog and a storyboard revisionist on Recess.
Whoa, not even just a boarder, a revisionist. Man, that's unless I have the hierarchy wrong, I think it goes revisionist and then you become just a full storyboarder, I think.
Though. I think so.
Yeah.
And he is now at DreamWorks. So gobbled up by the DreamWorks monster. But
what even is that now? Well, I guess, honestly, what is anything now? I don't know.
So we can go on and talk about the music of SpongeBob SquarePants. So very interesting in that the music is by a guy named Gregor Narholtz, who is a composer for the APM Music Company. So let's explain what that is. APM, Associated Production Music, is a company in Hollywood that has been existing for a long time, and all they do is make music that you could buy to put in your shows.
Oh.
That is the library that Ren and Stimpy draws from.
Oh.
That is the library that SpongeBob draws from. And I believe he wrote some of their favorite cues they use the most. So they hired him to write the
music. Original cues for the... Oh, that's great. I mean, the library music feel is one of my favorite bits of SpongeBob. Like, I mean, we talk so much about how much we love original orchestrated music for every episode. And I really do of any cartoon show. But there are rare shows that can take a needle drop and use it very creatively in very funny ways. And SpongeBob is one of those.
Yeah, you can hear some of those cues in the movie, but then you can hear original cues that he wrote. You can hear like some of that APM music, and I love it. And it is so much part of the Ren and Stimpy DNA. Like, let's take these like already composed pieces. It also saves you a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
But it adds it can add so much like texture to your show with these like serious orchestral pieces or like fun Hawaiian ditties or like circus music. There's just so much you can do with the APM library, and I think Nickelodeon just had access to it. Put your toys away. Well, all I gotta say, when you tell me not to play, I say no way. No way, no, 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 no way. I'm a kid, you say. When you say I'm a kid, I say, say it again. And then I say, thank you very much. So if you're thinking that you'd like to be like me, go ahead and try. The kid inside will set you free. I'm a goofy goober.